These are some measures that have been used. The one that's most common is the third one, as Larry Cundiff mentioned last night, because it brings in calf weight and reproductive performance. Some others that have been used, weaning weight per cow exposed and then bringing in the cow weight that's being maintained, are the energy intake, total energy intake of the cow and the calf, and residual feed intake is being used, starting to be used some. It appears that the relationship between RFI in growing animals, finishing animals, and the cow herd still bears some looking into. Not sure what it might be. Again, these measures do not consider economics. In 1972, symposium then, Klosterman, it would seem that if there were a size that is most efficient, we would have arrived at it by trial and error by this time, but we still do not know how big beef cattle should be. Probably we still don't. I believe there will be a place and a need for cattle which vary in size and rate of maturity, and that no one size will have advantages under all conditions. Keith Gregory in the 1972 symposium. A casual inventory of the kinds and types of feed and other resources available can only lead to the conclusion that different performance levels for many traits may effectively utilize the resources in different geographical areas and production situations. In the 1979 symposium, Dave Notter, a wide range of size classes was potentially optimal depending on conditions. In that same symposium, Tom Cartwright, optimal values for both size and milk may vary as costs and prices of cattle change. There appears to be an opportunity for increasing efficiency by more closely matching cattle to production conditions. Jenkins and Farrell, Meat Animal Research Center in 2002, at lower feed availability, breeds moderate in growth and milk were more efficient because of higher conception rate. But at higher feed availability, breeds higher in growth and milk were most efficient because the feed was enough for their genetic potential to be expressed. And so they concluded an efficient cow for one producer may be ineffective under different management. In that same symposium, Notter pretty well summed it up. I think efficient cows are those that produce calves regularly and easily. Most of the other things are negotiable, that is, can vary depending on the markets and production environments. Now, those last three or four quotes and many others of similar work, research, probably are involved in this table that's in the Beef Improvement Federation guidelines, matching genetics to conditions, where you have three levels of forage availability on the left and high and low environmental stress within each one, and then shows the matching production characteristics. Under mature size, you find high or large size show for general purpose herds shown twice, and it's where there's high forage availability. For a terminal situation, cows can vary from small to large depending on conditions, but in an optimum terminal cross, the sires should be large. So not many spots that you'll see that large size it really applies according to this table. Okay, so far we've talked about, or I've talked about, individual performance, individual valuation. In an early paper, Tom Cartwright said this: the efficiency of production of individual slaughter cattle measured as output-input of the individual may rank quite different from the output-input function of the herd. And the next year said we must now place less selection emphasis on individuality and more on herd performance. In the 85 BIF meeting, Hank Fitchew, the primary goal of beef improvement should be increased profitability. This goal is obtained by increasing productivity and reducing costs at the herd level, not the individual level. So, how should we evaluate cow efficiency? On an individual cow basis or the entire system? Let's remember that a beef cow operation basically operates on a fixed resource, a given piece of land, a certain amount of range, pasture, what have you. Larger and heavier milking cows can potentially wean heavier calves just from their inherent size and ability to, their genetic ability and maternal ability to raise heavier calves. But of that type of a cow, a larger, heavier milking cow, on this fixed resource, you can maintain fewer of them. Those are contrasts that are constantly with us. I think we can safely say that cow-calf producers should think of performance and efficiency not per cow, but per operation. It's a systems concept. Okay, the last topic, complementarity. The BIF guidelines in their glossary defines it this way: combining of breeds or individual animals that have characteristics that complement each other, thereby obtaining optimum progeny. This Smoky Charolais Angus cross is probably an example of that. Combine some things to optimize. In the late 1800s, when this picture was taken along the Gulf Coast of Texas, a lot of cattle probably looked like this. They were British-based, probably on some of the longhorn types that were originally here, and they just weren't adapted real well. There's a little bit of difference between the Gulf Coast of Texas and Herefordshire, England. Maybe that explains it. About that same time, in the early 1900s, and there had been some of these cattle, a few of them in before, but an importation from India brought in some cattle. And as Jim Sanders said, this eventually led to the formation of the American Brahmin, which, as I understand it, was basically created from combining about four of these breeds, for the most part. That was the base. So a different type of cattle was available. But there were some objections to them. Some people said, well, they're not beef type. So among others, this was done. Combined that type of cattle and the kind in the upper right. This happened to be shorthorns, eventually resulting in one of what have been called, for lack of a better word, American breeds, although the Brahmin maybe should be called the first American breed, since it was combined by combining breeds to form the Santa Gertrudis, an intermediate. So this is one of the ways that combining breeds that have some traits that complement each other has been done. But is that what complementarity really means? It does not, as Dr. Cartwright originally defined it. At least I think he originally did. I've not found it anywhere else. In 1969, he said that term meant the advantage resulting from the manner in which two characters combine or complement each other. And the next year, the degree which two or more breeds match so that the strengths of one breed cover the weaknesses of the other. Here's what he had in mind. That washed out picture in the upper left is an Angus Jersey, sometimes back then when this work was being going on, called an Ajax. An Angus Jersey crossbred cow, small, efficient, fertile, good milk production, bred to a large breed of sire, Charolais. There's still examples of it today. This is in the lower right. So this is complementarity, where you combine breeds, where you can utilize their strong points, but minimize or eliminate their weaknesses. Now, you can do this. It doesn't have to be crossbred. I think sometimes we think that complementarity involves crossbreeding, and it usually does, but it can be done within a breed using differences in size within a breed. In fact, when we started increasing the size of cattle in this country, we had some complementarity, some terminal sire effect going on, because we were trying to increase size, so the size of the sires we were using was larger relative to the size of the females they were being bred to. Now, over time, as we kept these females, we got into what has sometimes been called cow size creep. And when you get up to the point where the females are genetically as large as the males, then you've lost this advantage. So, maximum benefit from complementarity, almost by definition, requires a terminal breeding system. Because if you start saving the results of that first good optimum cross where you're taking advantage of one side and minimizing the disadvantages, if you save females out of that, then you've lost that maximum complementarity. In 1970, Tom Cartwright predicted that specialized dam and sire lines or breeds will be developed, and emphasis will shift from general purpose to special purpose cattle. 2 years later, Klosterman pointed out that that would require some kind of integration within the industry. At the recently completed NCBA meetings, Mark Tallman talked about complementarity, and I've extracted some of his comments. Beef breeds have become far too similar. Breed convergence dilutes the impact of breed complementarity. Most breeds need to decide whether they are a maternal or terminal breed. There will be a need for some producers to specialize in producing young cows with maternal genetics. But he pointed out these two problems with that. It's difficult to establish a market for terminal females until a group of dedicated terminal producers develops. By the same token, it's difficult to convince all-purpose producers to go into a terminal cross until a reliable supply of maternal line cows develops. Now, he did point out that the use of sex semen, if that could be feasible and economical, would make this much easier to accomplish. So I would summarize in this way. There is no inherent advantage in efficiency from increasing size of cattle. In my opinion, the thing that led us more down this road than anything else is the standard 140-day test. Because when we were testing cattle of different types, different sizes, different growth curves, it biased the efficiency of larger cattle. As we've seen, all breeds are becoming larger and more similar in size. Maximum complementarity requires a terminal breeding system. So, since cattle are more similar today and maximum complementarity requires a terminal breeding system, we'll probably not see much complementarity due to differences in size from here on. However, there's an opportunity still for complementarity from differences in type, especially in this part of the world. Here's what I'm talking about. Brahman crossbred cow with a Charolais sired calf, a Brahman Angus cow with a Simmental sired calf, another Brahman cross cow with an Angus sired calf, or it could be one of the American breeds, such as these Beefmaster cows down here with Angus sired calves. I think we're going to still see a good bit of that done in this subtropical zone of the United States that Larry Cundiff pointed out. I will leave you with this. Those two pictures in at the top of this screen are some of our competitors. They operate by severely confining the conditions, nutrition, otherwise. Even in the bovine world, those Holstein cows down there in the bottom, a picture taken up close to where I live, in their freestall lounging area with misters and fans, and even in the beef industry, in feedlots, the nutrition is highly controlled of those cattle. It's coming out of that structure in the back there. But just in the state of Texas, we have conditions ranging all the way from the upper left, the Trans-Pecos area, where they speak about stocking rates in cows per section, not cows per acre, the rolling plains of Texas, a central Texas coastal Bermuda operation, small grain down in the lower left in East Texas, a Gulf Coast pasture, and a brush pasture in South Texas. These are different conditions. I don't think we could expect the same cow to be the most efficient under all of those. Finally, let's remember this. The cow-calf segment requires about two-thirds of the total nutrients from conception to product. Sheer economics means that we're going to have to get most of that on the cow side from low-cost forages. It's the only way we can continue to be sustained. If we forget this, then we're not going to be sustainable. We can manage cows in dry lot on silage or what have you, but can we do it economically? No. Market preferences are important, and we need to pay some attention to them, always. Size of cattle and other things. And it appears that feedlots and packers, they're wanting to continually increase size of cattle. But it seems to me that the size of cattle that we arrive at will ultimately depend mostly on what is feasible in the nation's cow herds, because if we can't produce a calf to put into a growing or a feeding operation that goes into eventually beef, then we are not going to be able to sustain the beef cow business in this country. Thank you very much. I've enjoyed being here, and I hope I haven't bored you for the last 30 minutes.